Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Coco Express Show for Saturday, September 4th, 2010. I'm your host, Aurelia Lyles, and yes, we are live. Several weeks ago, we had Dr. Carol Penn on our show to discuss childhood obesity. Well, guess what? She's back. And the discussion today is bone health. Your bones now. Understanding your bones is an important part of your everyday health. We overlook the proper care of our bones until we have an issue. Before we have Dr. Penn come and explain the bones from infancy to geriatrics, I will give you some basic bone information. Let's begin. The outer surface of the bone is called the Okay, I'm not really good with the terminology, but I'm going to try to get it to you the right way. The periosteum. Periosteum. It's a thin, dense membrane that contains nerves and blood vessels that nourish the bones. The next layer is made up of compact bone. This part is smooth and very hard. It's the part you see when you look at a skeleton. Within the compact bone, there are layers of cancellous bones, which look like sponge. It looks like a sponge. The cancellous bones bone is not quite as hard as compact bone, but it is still very strong. In many bones, the cancellous bone protects the innermost part of the bone marrow. Bone marrow is sort of like a thick jelly, and its job is to make blood cells. A baby's body has about 300 bones at birth. These eventually fuse together to form the 206 bones that we adults have. Some of the baby's bones are made entirely of a material called cartilage. Other bones in the baby is partly made of cartilage. This cartilage is soft and flexible during childhood, and as you grow, the cartilage grows and slowly is replaced by bone, which is helped to form by calcium. By the time you get to be about 25 years old, the process is supposed to be complete. And after that happens, you can no longer grow any more bone. And your bones are as big as they're ever going to be. And that's as far as I can take you. So what we're going to do from this point going forward is we're going to have our expert, Dr. Carol Penn, come and give us further understanding of our bones.
Aurelia, it's
yes.
Dr. Penn, how are you?
I am fine. How are you? Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much, and that was a very good overview of bone health and bone growth. So, yes, we all know what we're talking about when we feel that hard structure under our skin there, which is our beautiful bones and our beautiful skeleton.
Okay. I kind of messed up on one of the terms. Is periosteum, is that what it is?
You got it. Periosteum.
Because I'm like, okay. Now, with the bones, you know, we have a progression, like with life, the bones in infancy, children, young adults, adults, middle age, and the older adults. That's the progression of the bone life, the bone history?
Yes, you know, the bones develop and progress as we do from, you know, the time where the skeleton is forming in utero inside the mom all the way up through, you know, old age. And when the bones, of course, they stop growing when we reach our adult height. However, the bones continue to reshape and reform throughout our life. And one of the things that, you know, has been in the news lately and something that we talk about is sometimes as we get older, we lose bone density, we lose bone mass, and the bones become brittle. We become more prone to fractures and whatnot. And that is something very important. The disease itself is osteoporosis. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about these brittle bones, or we're talking about losing bone mass. And so osteoporosis is defined as a disorder of the skeletal system characterized by weakened bone strength, which results in an increased risk of fracture. Now, the bigger question is, well, you know, does that have to happen? Does that have to be? And bone health, like all good health, is lifelong. It's something that we start from the time our parents are feeding us and we're growing and developing, and it can go all throughout our lives. It's not something that has to be a given, that you get old and your bones get brittle.
Okay. I believe that's something that a lot of people think, that they don't have to do anything from the time that, you know, I guess you could say when they become a teenager all the way up until they become older, and then they should concentrate on their bone health. But you're saying no, it's a lifelong process, and something that we should always keep in mind. And the question that I want to ask is, how much calcium do we need, and what are the best sources? Because I believe the calcium is the, if it's what's needed to form bones and strong bones.
Well, calcium is definitely something that is needed in our diet. And yes, the bones are formed of calcium, and taking dietary calcium has been shown to improve bone density and the bone turnover and the bone in place, a replacement that is so important throughout life. So one of the things is, I like to kind of back that up a little, even before I get into like amounts, because when you're talking about amounts of calcium of ingesting, you're, you know, most people are thinking of supplementing. Well, I'm just going to back this all the way up, because really good bone health starts from the time we are conceived and the nutritional profile of the mother all the way throughout life. So, for instance, I teach prenatal yoga. I also teach childbirth education classes. So I have these pregnant moms and these fathers-to-be, you know, sitting right in front of me. And one of the things I always talk about is good common sense nutrition, understanding nutrition, eating well, eating a whole foods diet. And if you're eating correctly, you are intaking through your diet, you know, your calciums, your magnesiums, which by the way, need to work together. If you're going outside and getting exposed outdoors, you're getting exposure to vitamin D, which is also very important for metabolizing calcium and for calcium doing the work that it needs to do in the body to create strong bones. So I want all the pregnant moms out there to be eating mostly, you know, a vegetable diet, lots of green and colorful non-starchy vegetables, a minimum of 4 servings daily. I want them to be eating lots of fruit, 3 to 5 servings daily. I want them to eat nuts and seeds, 1 to 3 servings daily. I want them to eat beans, 1 to 3 servings daily. Whole grains and starchy vegetables, 1 to 3 daily. And then you add in your fish, your eggs, your non-fat dairy, your poultry, and your meat. And you want to, you know, be careful about your meat and make sure that your meat is, you know, not pumped up with a whole bunch of antibiotics and hormones, but is in fact, your chicken and your cows, the ones that are free-ranging and grazing and eating the natural diet that they're supposed to eat. So you put all of that into this good foundation. That's going to increase the mom's nutritional profile, which includes your calcium, which includes your bone health, and that's going to help the skeleton, your baby's literal structure, including the skeleton, form in the most healthful way. So right from conception on, you're really talking about maintaining this bone health. And then when the child is born, of course, optimally, human baby, human milk, you know, breast milk, breastfed baby, which, again, it helps optimize how the body is metabolizing and forming the structures of the bones. So way before we get to, you know, how much, you know, calcium we should be taking in terms of a supplement, you know, what are all these steps backing up to conception and when the mom is pregnant that can be done to make sure that the child has the best start to life in terms of its overall bone structure and bone health. Now, you know, the short answer to your question in terms of how much calcium you want to be taking daily, well, you know, if you're going to take a supplement, you want to think about 1,200 milligrams a day, coupled with a minimum of 800 of vitamin D. And in terms of some food, just quickly, some calcium-rich foods would be plain low-fat yogurt. Think of a cup, you know, 8 ounces of yogurt. That has approximately 415 milligrams of calcium. Cheddar cheese, an ounce and a half, has 306. Milk, skim milk, has 302. Milk, reduced fat, that's your 2% milk, has 297. Mozzarella cheese, ounce and a half of that has 275 milligrams of calcium. Orange juice, calcium fortified, 6 ounces, 260. Cottage cheese has about 138. Spinach cooked, a half a cup, has about 120. Calcium fortified cereal, 1 cup. You can buy the calcium. Now, this is a wide range. That has anywhere from 100 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams. So you really have to read the label on the cereal box when it says calcium fortified cereal.
Mm-hmm.
Raw broccoli, a half a cup, has about 21 milligrams of calcium in it. So that's just, you know, an example of, you know, a dozen or so foods that are calcium rich and the different milligrams of calcium in those foods. But you can see if you're eating a good variety of foods and eating the appropriate amounts of foods in your, you know, daily life, you are getting quite a bit of calcium. And, of course, that takes awareness and education, so you're making those food choices that are calcium-rich.
Now, you have some adults that are lactose intolerant and some children as well. How do you supplement your calcium in the form of milk if you have a lactose issue?
That's excellent. That's an excellent question. Now, some of the foods that I talked about now, orange juice, you can buy calcium-fortified orange juice, cooked spinach, raw broccoli. Those are things, you know, that are non-dairy. A lot of your dark leafy green vegetables are also calcium-rich, you know, so your kale, your Swiss chard, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They're calcium-rich foods, so you can infuse your diet with those. I know I'm also a lactose intolerant household. So, and I substitute dairy products, i.e. cow's milk, with almond milk. Almond
mm-hmm.
milk, coconut milk, they all, rice milk, you can get them all calcium fortified so that, again, you can have your calcium in those products as well.
Okay. And you, when you talked about the mother when she's carrying the baby, now if the mother's not getting enough calcium in her diet, does the baby take it from the mother's bones in her body?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I was just curious about that one because
So what will happen, the baby, the growing life, the developing life is going to get its needs, energetic needs and nutritional needs met. And if the mom isn't taking it in through her diet, the baby's going to get its calcium because it's got to make a skeleton from the mom's bones. And this is going to, you know, give problems to the mom. If the mom isn't doing something about her nutrition, it'll show up in fractured teeth. You know, the teeth will chip and break. If the mom is already predisposed toward osteoporosis, it'll definitely put her further down that pathway. So it's very important for a pregnant woman to maintain a high nutritional profile, learn all she can about nutrition, and eat well absolutely throughout the pregnancy and then on throughout the breastfeeding year.
Okay. Now, once the baby is delivered and the mom is, you know, without child, how can both strengthen their bones?
Okay, so the baby is delivered. You got the little baby in her arms. One of the things, again, we want the mom in that the intensity of that first 6 weeks when she's in her recovery period. We want her to be eating all of these foods that I'm talking about in terms of that daily nutritional pyramid, some of the foods that I listed just now that are calcium-rich. And if she's doing that and she's breastfeeding, of course, she's passing all that benefit on to her newborn baby in the breast milk. And then beyond that, another key that is so important is exercise, lifelong exercise. So we want the parent to give a good example by getting out and initially, you know, we're talking in the newborn period, you know, get out in the fresh air, get exposed to the sunshine, push the baby in the stroller, better yet, carry the baby in a little sling or a baby carrier so that baby has close contact with the mom or the dad, and you get out and walk. You get a little pedometer, take your 10,000 steps a day, which is about the equivalent of about 5 miles, and it is at that point that you, again, will reap the most benefit in terms of weight loss. And at the same time, because you're weight-bearing, any weight-bearing exercise is going to increase and improve bone density. And the baby, the infant, is getting the benefit of the motion. And its little body, of course, is moving in response. So it's beginning to get the benefit of weight-bearing, of course, because the impact of gravity is also affecting the baby. And then initially the baby's going to sit up, the baby's going to crawl, the baby's going to walk. And gradually you're introducing more and more activity into the baby's life. And this is excellent. But at the same time, we as parents have to keep providing the example. So instead of watching TV after dinner, you know, the family goes out for a walk. You know, when the mom, after her 6 weeks recovery period is concluded and the doctor has checked her out and says, okay, you can go back to your normal activities, if she's been in any kind of exercise class, you know, that's the time to get back into it. But I'm just talking about even without just walking together as a family from the time that baby is born until the time those children go off to college, providing a lifelong example of how to care for yourself. And the benefit of any weight-bearing activity coupled with high-profile nutrition is going to maximize bone health. And so you really set the tone for lifelong bone health.
Okay.
In the home.
That's excellent. Now, the child is getting older, and the child is now able to run around and run about. So you set the stage for activity. However, the parents now, they have a tendency of, once they're out of the home, to eat not in the best manner. I'm guilty of that myself. Now, my thing is caffeine. Caffeine comes in a lot of different forms. How does caffeine affect your bones? I mean, we have coffee, we have chocolate. It comes in different forms. How does it affect the bones?
Well, too much caffeine, actually, it causes calcium to leach from the bone. So the bone integrity and the bone reabsorption and the bone redevelopment is compromised when you have excessive caffeine intake. So, you know, one cup of coffee a day is fine. You know, 1, 2, 3 cups, you know, coffee, a little bit of green tea actually can be healthy for you. We're talking about excessive intake. This is the person, you know, the 5 and 6 cup a day person. Same thing with excessive alcohol intake. That can also compromise bone development. So those are things that adults can watch. And, of course, kids have to watch caffeine because kids drink sodas. A lot of sodas, especially your colas, have caffeine in them. Of course, chocolate has some amount of caffeine in it. So you know, everything in moderation. Excessive intake of these items, which are meant to be taken in very small increments, are not good for you. And as a parent, frankly, if you can just cut soda out, I mean, why does a child need soda? Why on earth does anybody need soda? You know, you want to introduce, if anything, give your child more water to drink. Give your child that cup of rice milk to drink or that cup of almond milk to drink. Or if you're not lactose intolerant, give them the 2% milk to drink. Once the child is up and moving, you know, then they're beyond the breastfeeding stages. You know, they're up there a toddler. From toddlerhood, they're going on to pre-K and then to kindergarten and into those lower elementary grades. Why do they need soda at all? I am so not an advocate of giving children of any age soda.
Okay. Now, if anyone has any questions for Dr. Penn, please call 347-637-2319 and press 1. That's 347-637-2319 and press 1. Now, when you have all of this ingestion of the different things that are not good, like a lot of calcium, a lot of soda or chocolate or whatever the case may be, and you're not getting enough of the green leafy foods, or the calcium-rich foods or having a calcium-rich diet, you are prone to various bone disorders. What are they?
All right. So bone disorders, there are a number of bone disorders. I'm going to start with some of the more common ones and go down there. We already discussed osteoporosis, and that's a disorder of the skeletal system characterized by weakened bone strength, which results in an increased risk of fracture. So that's the one that's so common, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
in, you know, older adult life, 70 and above. And actually we're seeing it in much younger ages. So there is also something called von Richthofen disease of the bone, and this is when you have something called hyperparathyroidism. Thyroid is a hormone that we produce in our bodies, and if we have too much of it, we can get into trouble with this type of bone disease. And this, you get something called osteolytic lesions, where if you actually look at the bone, you can see something called brown tumor of the bone, and these are cystic or cyst-like spaces that are lined by something called osteoclast, which is a cell of the bone. And it's filled with this brownish material that results from actual, like, a bleeding into the bone or a hemorrhage. You know, rare, we don't get to see that too much, but that is one of the diseases of the bone other than osteoporosis. Then there's osteomalacia, which is vitamin D deficiency in adults. Then there's rickets, which is vitamin D deficiency in children. So, as I mentioned before, you know, you want to have your calcium and your vitamin D and your magnesium. These are important nutrients to maintain bone health. And you can also get something called Paget disease of the bone. Again, something that we see in elderly people. And let's see, is there anything else? Those are the main ones. And so also even scurvy, which is vitamin C deficiency. And that used to be a disease of sailors, you know, because they would go out to sea and be out to sea for months and months. We're talking hundreds of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't getting, you know, like our nice, like if you eat a nice orange, you're getting lots of vitamin C. Well, they didn't have those citrus fruits, so that wasn't uncommon for them to get scurvy.
Okay. Now, you've explained to us how we can prevent these, well, at least how we can try to prevent some of these conditions, and you've explained to us when we can begin. Now, who is most affected by bone disorders?
That also an excellent question. We used to think it was so much women, older women, postmenopausal women, which, yes, that is a large group that we do see this decrease in bone mass. However, we're now seeing it is really population-wide. we're seeing increased osteoporosis in children even. We're seeing it not only in, so the focus has been on the postmenopausal woman, but also in men. A lot of it's underdiagnosed in men. There are, it's not something that we often associate with men, but it is common in men, particularly older men. We're talking men, you know, 70 years old, 80 years old, that sort of thing. So it is, we need to be aware of our bone health across the population, across races and ethnicities, and certainly in both sexes, both the male and the female.
Okay. Now, are there certain signs and symptoms that we can look for that may give us an indication that there could be a problem brewing?
Yes. One of the things that you, again, the nutrition, what is this person eating? If this person is not eating that nutritional profile that we talked about, and they're not getting any exercise, bam, that is a hint that this person is at risk. In children, for instance, another sign is if there is a spontaneous fracture after minor trauma. You know, kids are tripping and falling all the time. It's a part of growing up. It's a part of playing. But if a child trips and let's say, you know, they put their hand down and then next thing you know they have a wrist fracture, that child needs to be evaluated for possible osteoporosis. Or if they're, same thing with an adult, or if there's been a history of multiple fractures, that's another sign that this person needs to be evaluated for osteoporosis. Some other risk factors for low bone mass density, again, across the population, chronic illness, chronic renal insufficiency, any gastrointestinal diseases, cystic fibrosis, any endocrine system disorders, when you're on excessive medications, that can be a problem, particularly in our older population. Some of these, you know, you get people that are on more than four medications, you get the cross-reactivity of the medications, and some of the cross-reactivity impacts bone density because it impacts how the bone is able to reform. And actually, again, leaching or draining calcium from the bone itself. Any kind of steroid use, any kind of anti-seizure medication, chemotherapy, radiation, you know, so people who have cancer. If you have primary bone disease, poor nutrition, lifestyle habits, excessive alcohol consumption, cigarette smoking, and lack of physical activity. So you can see there are many risk factors where a person you need to look at and start to think, you know, this person have osteoporosis or osteopenia, where we're beginning to see the lowering of the bone mineral density.
Now, what about people who are asthmatics? Because they are on constant steroid medications. How does that affect them, and should they be having some kind of test done to determine their condition or the severity of their condition?
Yes, and again, you know, good coordination of care with whoever is managing the asthma, you know, your primary care physician, meaning the pediatrician, your family medicine doctor or your internal medicine, or of a woman who might just be seeing an obstetrician gynecologist. You know, that's why it's so important to give a good history and let all your doctors know, yes, I'm on all these medications, this is how long I've been taking them. Because that doctor then begins to think, maybe what I should do is I should begin to look at some other possible risk factors. So, yes, a person who is a long-term asthmatic because of being on steroids is more predisposed toward diseases of the bone, or osteoporosis, osteopenia.
What are the tests that are done to determine the condition, if you're predisposed or if you're beginning to show symptoms of osteoporosis?
Okay, well, the first thing is taking a very good history. The other thing that they're going to do is give DEXA scan, which is a test that is done to show, you get something called your T-score. And if your T-score is more than 2.5 deviations away from the norm, that's the definition of osteoporosis. And they usually take this scan, it's a type of radiographic scan, where they look at the femoral neck, or that's where your thigh bone, femur, goes into the hip socket or acetabulum. And that's one place to look to measure, you know, is that measurement within the normal limits? Is it the appropriate thickness? Is it the appropriate size? If there's any deviation from that, then we know that we're running into a challenge or a problem with that. So the thing that, the other thing, again, we don't want you to get to the point where you have that definition of being osteopenic, which is the road, the pathway to becoming osteoporotic. So we want to be preventive. So this is the building the good eating habits early in life and throughout life, and then getting enough calcium and vitamin D, and then exercise, resistance-based, some high-impact exercise, very beneficial in terms of increasing and maintaining bone density. And we want to do this, again, throughout life, very important. Because once we get to, you know, where the diagnosing portion, then we're into difficulties. Then we're into problems. Then we're, you know, you're looking at pharmaceuticals, and the pharmaceuticals that you might use to treat osteoporosis, again, everything, you know, comes with its side effects. Some people find it very difficult to take the medication on a regular basis because of the side effects. So we don't want you to get there. We want to start way back from the time you're, you know, in your mom and throughout your life with these things, you know, good, you know. And it's, you know, it seems like I, you know, hear myself saying the same thing over and over and over again. A good whole food-based diet and good exercise, physical activity, it's preventive for so many things. I remember when we were talking about obesity, we were talking, again, same thing. We were talking about, you know, wow, you know, eating well, you know, being well, being healthy. Don't get sick in the first place. Don't get overweight in the first place. Let's do all those things to keep us away from that continuum.
Okay. Now, what I've noticed and what I've seen on TV, as you mentioned in the beginning of this interview, you said that what we see on TV so much is talking about menopause, perimenopause, postmenopausal women, and calcium and osteoporosis. Now, the question I want to ask is, once the woman has been diagnosed with the beginning signs of osteoporosis, what can she do? And is it the same with men when they reach a certain age, like you said, in their 70s? But aren't there signs prior to them getting into their 70s? And are men more predisposed, because there are a lot more men who wind up with prostate cancer at a certain age and they have to go through the chemotherapy? Doesn't that put them at a more increased risk for this as well?
Well, it's not that they're at a more increased risk. They are equally at risk. They are equally at risk. They have different risk factors, but the same, the prevention would be similar. You know, it's lifelong up to this point. And, yes, as you're correct. As you're saying, if a man has prostate cancer and the man, and, you know, any kind of cancer where he's going through treatment with chemotherapy and or radiation, that does affect the bone strength, male or female. And with the incidence, high incidence of prostate cancer and the different treatment modalities that are available, yes, those men are at an increased risk at that point and will show signs of loss of bone mass and bone density, what have you. So, and the same, you know, excessive alcohol intake, heavy smoking, all of that are signs that, again, yes, this man needs to do something, like stop smoking, stop drinking, if he wants to protect his bone density. The other thing, again, you know, is this person a couch potato, or is this person exercising most, if not every day during the week? So you can look at certain people and look at their lifestyle. Their lifestyle will indicate risk. And again, this would be whether it's a child, a man, or a woman. So I'll tell you a little, give you a little profile here. So a little case study, as it were. So this 73-year-old man, and, you know, he's presenting because he fell aboard a cruise ship, and he had a wrist fracture. He stumbled on the stairs, and he caught himself in time to prevent an outright fall. However, he noticed he had some wrist swelling and pain, and they got an X-ray was obtained, and it showed that he did have a fracture in his wrist. And then, you know, further evaluation, including an exam of his spine, there was no other fracture. And so this man's a gentleman. He had some mild high blood pressure or hypertension. It was well controlled. Then he was on a medication for that, and he was taking an age-appropriate multivitamin supplement, and he had no history of prior fractures or steroid therapy, no diabetes, no rheumatoid arthritis or any kind of hormonal disorders. He was unaware of any family history of osteoporosis or hip fracture. He was retired, and he had a reasonably active lifestyle. He went to the gym 3 times a week and played golf 1 time a week. He didn't smoke, and he drank a single glass of red wine daily. So would you say this person had osteoporosis or not?
It doesn't sound like he would have it.
Well, now, interestingly enough, though, he did have osteoporosis, even though there was all these other positive things going on, because, again, any time, because, you know, how many times do you trip and don't really fall, but you catch yourself? You know, like this man did, he grabbed onto a banister, and that resulted in a wrist fracture. So anytime you have a wrist fracture where there's little or no trauma, you know, that would be considered non-traumatic, that would be an indication of osteoporosis as it turned out to be in this gentleman. So that's, again, you know, that's why the history is important. So, you know, oh, so you have you broke your arm. How did you break your arm? Well, you know, that kind of stumbling and grabbing yourself shouldn't result in a break. So anytime you speak to an older adult and they tell you a story like that, you should be a little bit suspicious that this person does have osteoporosis, even though when you listen to the rest of the story, you think, oh, he's pretty active, you know, probably not. So now what's the type of treatment that a person in that category might receive? So one of the things that for this gentleman, you want to do preventive and lifestyle measures. So you want to make sure he's getting enough calcium, at least 1,200 milligrams per day, and then you might say take the calcium supplement, because who knows how this gentleman is eating or if he's eating enough food during the day and the recommended amounts, and vitamin D of at least 800 international units per day. He might also be placed on an oral bisphosphonate or medication for the osteoporosis, hopefully, you know, being able to tolerate that, but you still want him to do the lifestyle changes, and you want him to continue, yes, going to the gym 3 days a week and going on his golf outings once a week. And then, you want to follow up with this patient 6 months, a year later, you know, is the height staying stable? Were there no further fractures? And then, you know, we follow up again with another DEXA scan or bone density measurement, perhaps at the 2-year interval. So, again, that would be an example of a treatment plan of someone, and also someone you should have a high suspicion that this person could have osteoporosis.
Okay, you mentioned is the height staying stable. Now, what are the most visible, obvious visible signs of someone who has osteoporosis?
Well, usually you see, and men and women, you see something called the Dowager's hump, you know, where their shoulders slump forward and their back is rounded, and it's permanent. It's like that curvature of the spine has rounded, and they're in that C shape, and, you know, you see their head is jutting forward a little bit, and it can get quite pronounced. and it's, as you know, the spine itself is literally collapsing in on itself. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? Get a visual of that?
Yes, yes, yes. And
so, a person like that, almost all of them have osteoporosis 100%.
Okay. And I've seen some younger women with the curvature of the spine in that manner.
And those women, they might not have, because of their age, they might not have osteoporosis, but they might have osteopenia, or again, they're beginning to lose bone mineral density. Usually with a woman, we start to lose bone mineral density from 30 onward. And again, more typically, very, very thin women, very, very fair women with freckles, so thin-skinned and very thin, seem to be a segment of the population that's more prone than the general population. But yes, yeah, so when you see young women and you see that kind of slump, you know, they could definitely, and particularly if they're 30 on, they're starting to lose that bone mineral density. And while they might not have a diagnosis of osteoporosis as yet, they may be osteopenia, where they are losing that bone mineral density.
And what about the losing your height?
Losing your height, compression of the spinal column, you know, between each vertebra and the spine, we have a little cushion. And that little cushion acts as a shock absorber. And that shock absorber actually compresses. You know, so at the end of the day, we're a little bit shorter than we are at the beginning of the day, because when we sleep at night, that gets a chance to re-expand and we stretch out. So that's like a normal, where we lose a little bit of height, you know, lose it, regain it, lose it, regain it. Over time, however, that those compressive forces of the spine due to gravity, due to doing, you know, non-weight-bearing exercises, doesn't spring back. And then the bone itself actually begins to lose density. Again, your osteopenia going on to the osteoporosis. And so you actually see this permanent compression in the spinal column. And unfortunately, at some point in the disease process, you'll see seniors starting to get fractures in the vertebral column, spontaneous. They can be sitting doing nothing. And that's really tragic. It's painful. It's very costly, $10 to $15 billion a year, impacting our healthcare system when you have people in that condition of osteoporosis. And so you lose height, actual height in the spinal column.
Now, there's no way to reverse any of this once it starts.
Once you get osteoporosis, no.
Okay.
No. So that's why you say all the things that you can do to prevent is what you want to do. You know, the nutrition, the adequate, you know, recommending from National Institutes of Health, you know, we know that osteoporosis occurs in all populations and at all ages. We know that it is very important that we have adequate calcium and vitamin D intake. And those two nutrients are absolutely crucial to developing optimal peak bone mass and to preserving bone mass throughout life. We know that regular exercise contributes to development of high peak bone mass and may reduce the risk of falls in older individuals. So, you know, again, prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that's something that we have control over. I know osteoporosis runs in my family. And, you know, it's like, okay, forewarned is forearmed. So I know that I need to be mindful of what I'm eating, making sure that I'm getting the calcium, making sure that I'm getting the vitamin D, making sure that I'm exercising most days, if not 7 days a week. Because once I get the diagnosis of that, that's gone. I've lost that bone mass. Gone. And that's something we don't see a way of putting it back in. I mean, once it's gone, it's gone. So don't lose it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That I'm just kind of like overwhelmed in a sense because, as I said earlier, we don't really pay attention to what's going on with our bones. We just automatically think that they're going to do whatever they need to do for themselves until we have an issue. And this whole, the whole notion of your bone health is an important thing to take into consideration on a day-to-day basis. And the whole structure of our bodies are, it's up to us to keep ourselves healthy. We have control, as you said. And I guess I can't stress enough, to people about, you know, it's really important that you know how to take care of yourself. That's why we have someone like Dr. Penn here who is making it easy for us to understand how to be healthy. And she's explained everything in detail. But I want to go over one more thing. When you, what would be the best type of diet for any individual in order to maintain optimum health?
All right. So now, best diet. This is what I'm recommending, strongly, strongly recommending. I'm recommending that people, you know, a whole food diet. So you want your food to be as fresh as possible. You want to buy as much as you can, organic foods as much as you possibly can. You want your diet to be comprised mainly of, like if I had to draw out a pyramid for you, the vegetables, green and colorful, non-starchy, minimum 4 servings a day, daily. That's what I would put at the top of my list. And included, I'm going to name some vegetables, and this might help some people. Collard greens, mustard greens, turnip greens. Excellent, excellent source of nutrition. Kale, excellent. Watercress, bok choy, spinach, broccoli rod, Chinese cabbage, Brussels sprouts, Swiss chard, arugula, make salads with arugula, cabbage, romaine lettuce, broccoli, red pepper, carrot juice, tomato and tomato products, cauliflower, strawberries, pomegranate juice, blackberries, plums, raspberries, blueberries, oranges, cantaloupes, beans, all variety of beans, seeds, flax seeds, sunflower, sesame seeds, eat a couple of handfuls every day, pistachio nuts, tofu, walnuts. So, again, those are 30 different foods that are very, very high that in nutrient density. So that's when you're thinking, like, what are my sources of vegetables? I just gave you 30 different fruits and vegetables. Then you want to have your fruit. Then you want to have your nuts and seeds. And then you want to have your beans. Whole grain, starchy vegetables, 1 to 3 daily. So that's like your sweet potato would be an example of a whole grain, starchy vegetable. All right, even, you know, a white potato. All right, so now, fish, eggs, non-fat dairy. Under that, poultry and meat. So you want to eat, you know, so you want to have your salmon, you want to have your halibut, you want to have your tuna. These are deep sea cold water fish. And when you're buying your fish, stay away from the farm raised fish because, again, just like the cows and the chickens that are pumped up with antibiotics and foods that they would not normally eat in the wild, that's the same thing with those fish. So when you look at the, you know, salmon in the case and the fish section of the market, you know, you see the big salmon that's farm raised and you see the little salmon that's wild caught. Buy that little one that's wild caught. He's more nutrient dense than that big farm raised animal. Same thing with your poultry and meat. That's where it's worth to invest a little bit more financially to get that no antibiotic free range beef than it is to get that, you know, poor animal that's been inhumanely slaughtered and then just injected full of hormones its whole life. you want to stay away from, you know, white breads or white foods in general. So you eat a whole grain brown rice as opposed to a white rice. Stay away from your full fat dairy. You know, if you're going to buy cow's milk, buy 2%. Better yet, buy some almond milk or some coconut milk or some rice milk that's fortified with calcium. Definitely stay away from all processed foods, no processed meats, no processed foods, and your sweets. You know, again, minimize, minimize, minimize. And after a while, if you're not used to eating that way, it does take some adjusting. No question that it takes some adjusting. What I suggest to people, don't try to change it all at once. Just change one little thing and then change another thing. And then gradually over time, you're able to make and sustain the other changes in your diet.
Okay, great. That is excellent. It was, I couldn't write fast enough. You were just going so quickly with all this information. And I know that there are some things in my diet, like I love ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I love butter almond ice cream, and that is my guilty pleasure.
Yes, I hear, but you know, it's okay to have a little bit of guilty pleasure, you know, once or twice a week. Now, if you're eating a pint of it every day, well, you know, you're definitely challenging your system.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what about the soy milk?
Soy milk. Again, you know, soy, unfortunately, it's one of those crops that's highly, highly, highly cross-contaminated. So I always caution people to watch their consumption of soy milk. Soy milk can also have what they call phytoestrogens in it, which is plant-based estrogens, and there are some that, you know, caution patients, particularly patients with estrogen-based cancers, to watch their consumption of, overconsumption of soy or not to have it at all.
Okay, because soy is like one of the most popular milks on the market now.
Mm-hmm. And notice I said almond milk or rice milk.
Mm-hmm.
But again, though, if you can get yourself an organic soy milk,
mm-hmm.
look again, read the label. Is this an organic soy milk? Is it just, or has it been cross-contaminated with other things? It's worth going, like, particularly if you have a Whole Foods market near you or Wegmans or even a lot of the popular chain supermarkets are now having an organic section. Go in there and start to educate yourself. Pick up the different cartons and read the different cartons. Now, it's even in the regular dairy cases and a lot of the chain supermarkets, you can find the almond milk, the coconut milk right alongside with the whole milk and the cow's milk because of popular demand. The public mm-hmm. is getting more and more educated.
Oh, that's excellent. That's good to know because I had some chocolate almond milk the other day, and I thought I'd lost my mind. It was so good.
Yes.
And it
I
was
love
by,
the almond
yes,
milk.
Yes, it was delicious. And I put the regular vanilla almond milk in my cereal, and I was just it was a double treat for me. It was just really good, and I would recommend that to anybody who wants to try it. And it just made the cereal taste even better. I even drank the last of the milk at the bottom of the bowl as well.
Oh, my. Yeah, I encourage you to try that almond milk. It is so good. You will be pleasantly surprised. So I hope that your listeners will take advantage and go out. And like I say, don't necessarily go and throw everything in the refrigerator. Just try one thing. Bring home the almond milk
mm-hmm.
and taste that and see if you like that. I mean, there's so many simple, simple, simple things that you can do. So, you know, think of it this way. One step at a time, one healthy meal makes you more healthy that day. So each time you eat a healthy meal, you're that much more healthy. Sometimes, otherwise, you know, people get overwhelmed and they think, oh my goodness, I have to make all these changes and do all these things. But no, you know, one healthy meal makes you more healthy. And you keep repeating that over and over and over and over and over again, And then you find yourself, well, wow, I ate 4 healthy meals this week. I ate 10 really healthy. You know, so it just grows with time. And it's fun, and you'll get the benefit. But you're looking at yourself and go, wow, look, I look younger. Wow, I lost 4 pounds. Wow, I feel better when I move.
And
you're rewarded by your effort.
Yes, most definitely. Now, how would people be able to get in contact with you if they wanted to ask you questions or just find out more information and details?
Well, they certainly can get in touch with me if they you can visit my website, www.carollifedance, that's C-A-R-O-L-L-I-F as in Frank, E-D-A-N-C-E, www.carollifedance.com. They can email me through, I'm going to give you my Yahoo email, my website email. It's been a little bit difficult lately. carol.lifedance@yahoo.com. Again, that's Carol, my first name, .lifedance, L-I-F as in Frank, E-D-A-N-C-E, @yahoo.com. Those are the, that's the best way to get in touch with me would be through my email. And I'm located 39 Avenue of the Commons, Suite 106, Red Bank, New Jersey, 07702.
Okay, so if they want to send you something, a letter in the mail with questions or information that they want to share with you, if they need to get in contact with you regarding what we discussed on the show, she's given you all the different ways that you can contact her, which is great. And I just want to thank you so much for joining us. This information has been so impactful for me because good health is important. I'm trying my best to maintain my health because when I get older, I want to be one of those ladies that are in her 70s that are running around laughing and giggling. That's my goal.
Yeah, and I want to join in with you with that. And you, Aurelia, you are doing such a wonderful service in your show by bringing this information forward to the public because this is what we all need to be healthy. I always tell people, I'm not doing this for now. I'm kind of good right now. I'm doing this for my 95th birthday party, and I sure hope that you're here and I can send you an invitation and we can run around and have a good time together.
Oh, great. I would love that. Thank you so much, and thank you for the compliment. It's all about just informing people to let them know different things, what's going on out there, how to care for yourself, just how to live a better life and how to get the different negative things out the way so that you can move forward to having the best life possible.
Aww.
Yes, and
well,
so
thank you for having me again.
You are welcome back anytime. And as you know, if any other issues come up that you want to discuss, please feel free to just let me know, and you'll be back on in a heartbeat.
Thank you. I certainly will.
Okay, great. So, folks, that's our show for today. Please join us next week. I believe we're doing a show on relationships. I haven't really fleshed out all the details, so that's a little iffy. However, we will definitely have our monthly segment with Steve Duncanson, Paradigm Shifters, Principles for Life and Success, on September 18th at 12 noon. And the book we're supposed to be reading is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. So if you want to breeze through it between now and then, go ahead so you can have questions for him. That's it for today. Have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful day, and please be safe and healthy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.